5.1 millimeters.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to just stop for a second. Find, I don't know, a standard pencil. You know, the yellow ones from school.
Yeah, sure.
That's about 6, maybe 7 millimeters thick. Now imagine a whole computer processor, battery, screen, everything that is way thinner than that pencil.
It's a number that doesn't really compute, does it? It sounds less like engineering and more like a magic trick or a typo in a spreadsheet.
It really does. But according to this massive stack of documents we're looking at today, leaked CAD files, supply chain whispers, it is not a typo. It is the iPhone 18 Air.
And it is the elephant in the room. Or maybe the razor-thin slice of metal in the room.
Exactly. And it has the entire tech world just, you know, completely freaking out.
Freaking out is putting it mildly. I mean, the sources we have, and some of these are really dense, we're talking about exotic metallurgy and new wireless protocols, they suggest this isn't just a new phone. It's a divergence point.
A divergence point.
Yeah, it's like Apple is looking at the last 15 years of smartphone design and just saying, okay, that chapter's done. Here's the next one.
And that is exactly what we need to unpack. This is our deep dive into the, I guess, the dawn of portless design. And we have to figure out, is this the future we actually want? Or is it a total nightmare of dongles and incompatibility?
Well, looking at these schematics, you can see a lot of things are missing.
Oh, yeah. It's like they played Jenga with the component.
That's the theme, the great deletion. But before we get to what's missing, we have to talk about how this thing even exists physically.
Right, because I have PTSD from 2014. I think we all do. I see ultra-thin iPhone, and my brain just goes to a very dark place.
You're thinking of Ben Gate.
The iPhone 6, it was 6.9 millimeters thick, and people were snapping them in half just by sitting down.
Mm-hmm.
So if this new phone is 5.1 millimeters, that's almost 2 full millimeters thinner. Mm-hmm. How is it not just an expensive fortune cookie that cracks in your pocket?
That is the first hurdle. And the solution, according to these supply chain reports, is something that sounds like it was ripped straight out of a comic book.
What is it?
The material. It's called liquid morphium.
I saw that in the notes. I thought it was just a marketing buzzword. It sounds like something Wolverine would be made of.
It really does. But the science is genuinely fascinating. It's not just a fancy name for steel. It's what's called a bulk metallic glass or an amorphous metal alloy.
Okay, hang on. Amorphous metal. Break that down for us. Most metals are crystalline, right?
Correct. In standard aluminum or even titanium, the atoms are all arranged in this rigid, grid-like crystal structure, like a perfectly stacked wall of bricks. It's strong, but it has a weakness.
Okay.
Apply enough force, and those grid lines, they can slip past each other. Or cracks can travel along those lines. That's why metal bends and eventually snaps.
And liquid morphium is different.
Completely different. Its atomic structure is disordered, chaotic. Imagine freezing a liquid so fast the atoms can't line up in that grid.
So there are no grid lines.
Exactly. So there's no easy path for a crack to travel. The claim in our source material is that this alloy is 3 times more rigid than grade 5 titanium.
So chaos at an atomic level actually makes it stronger.
Yeah.
That is wild.
It gives it a really high elastic limit. It can flex and just spring back to its original shape where titanium would just bend permanently. It's the only way you could build a true unibody chassis at 5.1 millimeter without it just folding.
So it's an exoskeleton.
A super metal exoskeleton, basically.
Okay, so the outside is indestructible. That solves bending. But what about the inside? You can't just shrink a battery. Physics is still physics.
And this brings us to the most controversial part of the whole thing. To hit that 5.1 millimeter target, Apple didn't just shrink components, they evicted them.
Oh.
And the biggest casualty, the USB-C port.
This is the part that scares me. The port is gone.
On. Vaporized. And the sources explain why. It's not just an aesthetic choice. It's not just courage. It's a geometric necessity.
How so?
Well, a standard female USB-C port assembly needs about 2.5 millimeters of vertical depth.
Just for the connector itself.
Right, just the hole. Then you need shielding, solder points, clearance for the board.
So in a 5.1 millimeter device.
Wait, the math on that?
That port assembly would eat up like 60% of the internal thickness right at that spot. You literally cannot fit the screen, the back, and the port in the same stack.
So the Air name isn't just marketing.
It's a constraint. If you want the thinness, the port has to die. You have to choose the plug or the profile.
Wow.
And they've also completely redesigned the logic board. The leaks describe this sandwich architecture where all the main chips are compressed into a footprint half the current size, but stacked vertically to save space for the battery.
Which sounds like a thermal nightmare, but okay, we'll get to that. I want to stick with the port because this changes how we actually use the phone. I'm thinking about the pro users here.
The videographers, yeah, the creators. All right, I shoot in ProRes sometimes. We're talking files that are 50, 60, 100 gigabytes.
Yeah.
Right now, I plug in a Thunderbolt cable, and it's done. Without a port, what am I supposed to do? Wait 3 days for it to upload to iCloud?
This is the data dilemma, and Apple knows they can't sell a phone that feels slower than the old one. The solution detailed in the specs is something they're calling AirDrop Pro.
Which I assume is just a rebrand of AirDrop, because AirDrop is not move 100 gigabytes great.
It's not a rebrand, it's a completely new hardware layer. They've invested heavily in something called WiGig 2.0. It operates on the 60 gigahertz wireless spectrum.
60 gigahertz, that's way higher than normal Wi-Fi.
Much higher, and the benefit of that high frequency is bandwidth. The specs claim it can beam data at 40 gigabits per second.
40? Wait a second, I know that number. That's Thunderbolt 4 speed.
It matches the wired speed exactly, so in theory, you lose nothing in terms of velocity.
Okay, that sounds impressive. If I can get cable speeds without the cable, maybe I'm on board. But there's always a trade-off. What's the catch?
The catch is range. 60 gigahertz waves are incredibly fragile. They can't penetrate walls. They can barely go through a person. They just degrade so fast over distance.
So I can't be across the room.
You can't even be across the desk. The source material is very clear.
Hmm.
This 40 Gbps speed has a sub-10 centimeter effective range.
Sub-10 centimeters. That is intimate.
The leak describes a whole new user behavior. You have to physically place the iPhone onto the palm rest of your MacBook. It initiates this handshake, almost like NFC, but for a massive data pipe.
It's a data kiss. You have to make the device's touch to get the speed.
That's a very vivid way to put it, but yes. The laptop effectively becomes the dock. The second you pull the phone away, the connection drops back to normal, slower Wi-Fi.
It's clever, I'll give them that.
Uh-huh.
But it does introduce a new anxiety. Speaking of which, let's talk about the ultimate fear, the brick.
The bricking fear, yep.
We've all been there. An update fails, the screen goes black. Today, I grab a cable, plug it into my Mac, and force a restore.
Mm.
If there's no port and the OS is dead, do I just have a very expensive paperweight?
This was a huge red flag in the forums we looked at, but the engineers seem to have anticipated it. The sources reveal a hidden protocol, OS recovery over MagSafe.
How does that work if the phone is brain dead?
The wireless charging coil isn't just for power, it can also handle low-level data. So even if the main OS is down, the charging circuit has its own tiny little firmware. You snap it onto a MagSafe puck connected to a computer.
And puck can talk to it.
It initiates a handshake and can flash the firmware wirelessly. It becomes the emergency umbilical cord.
Okay, that eases the panic slightly. But let's pivot to the other main function of the cable power.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I hate wireless charging as it exists today.
Why is that?
It's inefficient, it gets hot, and it's just so slow. If I have 15 minutes before I have to run out the door, I'm plugging in for a fast charge, not rested on a pad to get 3%.
Mm-hmm.
Can a portless phone actually compete with a wire on speed?
This is where the specs get truly wild. We are seeing a huge leap in technology that they're calling MagSafe X, and the wattage numbers are, well, they're aggressive.
Hit me with them.
200 watts.
200. Through the air. That sounds like a fire hazard. That sounds like a microwave.
It sounds extreme, I know. But yes, 200 watts of inductive charging. The claim is 0 to 100% in under 10 minutes.
How is that even possible? Pumping 200 watts into a single coil would melt the phone?
It would. So they're not using a single coil. They're using a quad coil architecture.
Okay.
Instead of one big loop, MagSafe X uses four smaller nanocrystal coils distributed across the back of the device.
So it spreads the load.
Exactly. It prevents a single thermal hotspot. And remember that liquid morphium chassis we talked about?
The metal glass exoskeleton?
It acts as a giant heat sink. It dissipates that heat way faster than the old glass sandwich designs. The whole phone becomes a radiator.
That sounds incredible in theory. 10 minutes to a full charge changes everything. But I'm sensing a but coming.
The but is the cost of entry. To get those 200W speeds, you can't use your old MagSafe puck.
Of course not.
You need the new proprietary ceramic charging pad.
Ceramic? That sounds expensive.
It uses graphene cooling layers to handle the energy, and the leaks are very specific. It is not included in the box. And the rumored price?
Let me guess. $100.
$129.
So to actually use the main benefit of the portless design, you have to pay a $130 tax on day one.
That seems to be the strategy. Create a problem, sell the solution.
Let's talk about the interface, because the deletion didn't stop at the port. The buttons are gone too.
All of them.
No volume rockers, no power button, just a smooth slab of metal. How am I supposed to turn the volume up without looking?
This is where haptics replace mechanics. The sides of the phone have capacitive crusher zones.
Like the trackpad on a MacBook.
Exactly. When you click that trackpad, it doesn't actually move. It just makes you think it moved. The iPhone 18 Air uses a new Taptic Engine V4 to do the same thing.
Phantom clicks.
Yep. For volume, you just slide your thumb up or down the smooth edge. For other things, there's an action zone. You squeeze the frame, and the engine delivers this incredibly precise, localized click.
I can see the appeal for durability. No moving parts means nothing can break.
But,
I don't know, there's something about a real button.
It's muscle memory. But they're betting the cool factor wins out. And speaking of seamless, they also got rid of the speaker grills.
Wait, what? No speaker holes at the bottom?
None. They deleted them to get an IP69K waterproof rating, which means it's basically hermetically sealed.
So where does the sound come from? Telepathy?
Hey, not quite. The screen itself, it's called Crystal Sound OLED.
The glass is the speaker.
The entire display panel vibrates to act as the diaphragm. The sources say the clarity for voices and mids is actually better than traditional speakers. They describe it as sorcery, but there's a trade-off.
Let me guess. Basses.
Physics again. To make bass, you need to move air. Without a physical chamber, the low-end thump is severely reduced. It'll sound crisp, but thin. Audiophiles will hate it.
So let me recap. A phone that is sealed tight, vibrates to make sound, you squeeze it to click, and you have to kiss it to a laptop to transfer files, it feels like.
Mm.
Like a fork of the road for technology.
That's a fantastic way to put it. It really seems like this is the year where two tech religions just split off.
Let's unpack that, because usually all the big phones start to look the same after a while.
Not anymore. The sources draw this hard line in the sand between the iPhone 18 Air and the Samsung Galaxy S26 Ultra.
Yep.
On one side, you have Samsung with the functionalist philosophy. Their phone is rumored to be thick. It's got an S Pen slot, full USB-C port, 100W wired charging. It prioritizes utility.
It's a Swiss Army knife. It might be bulky, but it can do everything.
Exactly. And on the other side, you have Apple, the futurist. Zero ports, 200W wireless, ultra thin. It prioritizes an aesthetic vision over everything else.
It's power users versus minimalists. If you're a gamer who needs zero latency or a videographer with a bag full of SSDs, the Samsung looks like safety. This iPhone looks like a risk.
And that brings us to the most critical part of the source material. We have to talk about the ecosystem trap.
This is the part that hit home for me. I looked at my tech drawer this morning. I have a backbone controller for gaming. I have a nice lavalier mic. I have three portable power banks.
And if you buy the iPhone 18 Air,
they're all e-waste.
Yeah. The sources describe this as creating a multi-billion dollar vacuum. By deleting the port, Apple isn't just selling a phone. They are forcing the entire accessory market to reset around MagSafe X.
Forcing you to rebuy everything. New mics, new chargers, new controllers.
And the critics in the material ask this question. Is this courage, like Apple said when they removed the headphone jack? Or is it just greed, a way to juice the quarterly earnings?
That's the heavy question. Because if the tech works perfectly, then maybe it is courage. But if it's glitchy, if that handshake fails, then it's just a user-hostile design.
And that brings us to the verdict. The inspector's view in our notes sums it up perfectly. This is a device Apple wants us to desire, not one we need.
It's pure desire. It's jewelry.
It is, but very expensive jewelry.
What's the damage?
The base model starts at $1,299. A $100 jump over the current Pro Max.
And that doesn't include the $129 charger you basically have to buy.
So you're in for over $1,500 after tax just to get in the door, and that's if you can even find one.
Oh.
The yield rates for that buttonless frame and the liquid morphium are apparently a nightmare. Rumor is stock will be severely limited at launch.
So it's expensive, hard to get, and it breaks compatibility with everything I own. And yet, looking at these renders, I kind of want to hold it.
See, that is the trap, isn't it? Even when it's impractical, the new is just so compelling. It feels like the future, even if the future is inconvenient.
So let's leave our listener with this final thought. We've laid out the specs, the liquid metal, the missing ports. The question isn't just about the phone. It's about what kind of user you are.
Right. The question from the discussion pit is this. Are you a functionalist or are you a futurist?
Are you willing to trade the reliability of a physical click and the certainty of a copper wire for the sheer aesthetic of what comes next?
And can wireless charging ever truly replace the trust you have in a cable when you're at 1%?
That's the gamble. It's going to be a fascinating year. Thanks for diving deep with us.
Until next time.